Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to a special edition of Saturday Morning with Joy Keys. I'm your host, Joy Keys. I want to thank you so much for tuning in. You can follow me on Twitter, at Joy Keys. Also, check us out on Facebook, Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys, and on Instagram, that's Saturdays with Joy Keys there. And also now, you can check us out Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, as well as here at Blog Talk Radio. You just heard Dory. This is from Billy Child's most recent album, Acceptance. And he's here today. He's a 16 Grammy nominations under his belt, 5 Grammy Awards. He's currently serving as president of Chamber Music America. He's played with so many people. The list will go on, but that would be the end of the show, so I'm not even going to try to go there. But he recently had album Rebirth on Mac Avenue at Records, but now this is his second album with them, Acceptance. And good morning, good afternoon, Billy Childs.
Good morning, Joy.
Thank you so much. Well, I'm trying to hang in there with this crazy environment, pandemic, protest.
Oh.
Cold weather now.
Well, add to that fires, which was like about the main fire in the main fire in Southern California was about 3 miles from me, so we had evacuation warnings. And the air has been pretty unlivable, you know. But now, yesterday was the first time I saw skies that were blue.
So were you wearing some special mask other than just the regular pandemic mask so that you could breathe out in the air?
Well, what I did was, like, on the first day that it got really bad, I just checked into a hotel. That was because I'm far away from the beach. I checked into a hotel for 5 days near the beach. And then I ordered an air purifier on Amazon. So the day that I got back, it arrived. And then those things really make a difference. So, that really helped the situation.
So that really works. You know, I'm always wondering about those. I've seen those in friends' places, and I'm always like, is this thing really picking up anything here, you know, or is this a gimmick? So you're saying that the one you got really worked. You felt that it made a difference.
Well, I'll put it this way. The whole house smelled like smoke, except for the room that I had the purifier in. It smelled more. It was normal.
Yeah, normal. All right. Well, that sounds pretty scientific to me, Billy. I mean, I don't know about anybody.
You can't get much more scientific than your nose.
Right. Now, you know, I heard there was an earthquake. It was a small earthquake, like almost 4-point-something. Are you in near that one? Or?
Yeah, it actually woke me up. Yeah.
Okay.
And it only lasted like maybe about 5 to 7 seconds, you know. It was like a rumble.
Yeah,
and then nothing in the house was in disarray or anything. Everything was as I left it. So it was a minor thing, thank God.
Is that one of the first? How many earthquakes have you been in? Should I ask that question?
Oh, geez. Like, I don't know, at least 5. Major ones that
mm-hmm.
I mean, the first one was in 1969 or something, and that was like 6-point-something, and that's
bigger. Yeah
Then another one was like when my son was 2 years old, and the whole house, it was the Northridge earthquake. I think that took place in 1993 or something, you know. And then, you know,
what do you do? What do you do? Do you go in under the frames of the door? Do you go in the bathroom? I mean, what do you do?
That's what they used to tell you. I just go under a thing that is hard, you know, that
right.
is sturdy, you know.
Okay.
I mean, came to that. I mean, I haven't really because they've only they've lasted, you know, like in the at the most like 10 to 20 seconds or something, and you don't have time to rationally think, oh, okay, this is the best strategic point. At least I don't. But if I were to think of that, there's a table here that I would probably go under.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, you guys have that, but, you know, recently we've been having tornadoes out here. Like, in the last year, there's been at least 6 or 7 tornadoes, like the emergency warnings that come on our phones. And we're like, what the heck? There's no global warming going on, Billy.
Yeah.
I mean, I just kind of, that's like that fake news stuff, you know, don't listen
right.
to it. But, I mean,
yeah.
never. I'm 50, and I've never, I think I could count 1, 2 maybe, and they were maybe like certain parts of Pennsylvania, not like in the city of Philadelphia, you know, possibly a tornado. But this is like here in Philadelphia. And I remember one morning, like 3 o'clock in the morning, the thing went off and it was like, get down in the basement. And it sounded like a train. Like I felt like I was
wow.
Dorothy. Yeah. I felt like
wow.
I was Dorothy
yeah.
In the Wizard of Oz thing. And I was like, wow, it really does sound like a train type of sound. So
yeah.
Definitely things are switching up.
Actually, I do think global warming is behind all of that. It's I do. With these fires. I mean, look, it was like 115 degrees here the other day, which is actually what I don't know if it was arson, but I know that. It got extraordinarily dry here, and it was hotter than it's ever been. I mean, it's been getting hotter and hotter every year. But that's a whole nother thing. I mean, you know, we should probably be on Real Time with Bill and Mark if we want to talk about that.
Exactly. you know, let me play some more of your music. This is going to be Acceptance from the album Acceptance. Hold on. Acceptance, if you're just tuning in, from Billy Child's most recent album called Acceptance. He's here today talking with me. He's in the West Coast. We're in the East Coast. This is the beauty of technology. So, look, Billy, you know, for the people who may not be familiar with you, why are you a musician, a composer? What's the thing with the music? I mean, how did you get roped into it? Because, you know, most musicians, it's like, oh, you're going to be poor, sitting on the corner with a little can shaking for quarters.
Yeah. Sometimes it feels like that. I mean, I grew up with music, and my parents never laid that thing on me, you know, about, trying to choose affluence over your artistic expression. They were both school teachers. They loved music. They had eclectic tastes in music, you know, so I got exposed to like European classical music and American classical music, jazz, you know, and at a very early age, you know, I would listen to Bach, and I'd also listen to modern jazz quartet. You know, I'd listen to Joe Beam with Stan Getz. And then I have two older sisters who had very eclectic music tastes. So I would, you know, hear like James Brown, Sly and the Family Stone, and the Supremes, and also hear Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young, Laura Nero, Paul Simon, and I'd hear all of that. And then I got exposed to progressive rock and also fusion music, you know, in my early teens. So like Return to Forever and the Mount Vishnu Orchestra, Emerson, Lake and Palmer. Emerson, Lake and Palmer, all of these things kind of affected me, and I was, you know, I just loved music. I mean, it connected with me. It seemed like a language that I could understand, that I could relate to. So there was a piano in this boarding school for boys that I went to when I was 14, and I just started playing it, you know, and it just seemed, everything seemed to fall into place, and it made sense to me, and I knew, you know, pretty at that age, I wanted to do this for the rest of my life.
Wow. So what about the instrument decision? You know, because some people play multiple instruments. Do you play more than just the piano?
No, I kind of focused on the piano. When I was younger, I had lessons in other instruments. Like I played cello for a minute. I played guitar. I played drums. The piano was always around the house, and it was readily accessible, and it's pretty much a universal instrument where you can do many things on it. You can play the melody, you can play the harmonies, you can be rhythmic on it, and the notes are kind of just right there. You don't have to make the notes like you do on other instruments, whether it's blowing into it or plucking a string or something. You have to produce a sound. With the piano, you just push down the key and the sound is produced. So it was right there, and also since you can do many things at the same time on the piano, that was something that made me want to do it more, you know. So you had your left hand and your right hand, and you could play chords in your left hand and play a melody in the right hand or vice versa. And so it just, you know, it just seemed to make sense to me to do that.
The first song I played when we started the show was called Dory, and I read that was dedicated to Dory Kaimi? I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it.
Kaimi.
Kaimi, okay. Talk to us about that. How did that come about?
Well, when I first heard Dory Kaimi's music, it was, again, what I was just talking about, being raised in my household. There was a group called Sergio Mendes and Brazil 66. Brazil 66, obviously, because they were really big in 1966. Mm-hmm. So they had these really great songs. You know, it's very popular in America during that time, and a lot of the songs were written by Dory Kaimi, and so I grew up listening to these songs. And then fast forward later to like 1990, when my career is kind of underway, I went to this little club in Los Angeles called Le Cafe, and he was playing, and I had heard people saying, "Oh man, you got to check out Dory Kaimi's group." So I went up there. And it was one of the best shows I've ever seen in my life, you know. It's just beautiful, magical. And so he and I became really good friends because I don't know what brought us together eventually, but he ended up using me on his records, and then we did a tour. And I learned a lot about playing Brazilian music from playing with Dory. Mm-hmm. But he's a guy that he writes these beautiful, like long, winding melodies with these beautiful, gorgeous harmonies, you know, and it's more like reflective, his music. So when I played him this song that I dedicated to him, he said, "Well, I didn't realize I was so fast."
Yeah. That's funny. Yeah. He's doing that, everybody has interpretation. It's art, you know. It's like you go to a museum and you're looking at a picture, and somebody says, "Oh, I see the square," and they're like, "No, there's a circle." And well, didn't you see the woman dancing? And you're like, "No, they're sitting." It's like everybody has a different interpretation. you know.
Right.
So that's interesting. Now, you know, we have a lot going on in the world. We talked about the weather, but, you know, we have also a lot of protests in reference to police brutality.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, George Floyd sparked that. How is that affecting you, your music, and your family out there in California?
Well, I mean, you know, if you're black, you know, and you have children, you're very concerned about the police. You know, and I have two boys, one is 28 and the other is 24. I've had encounters with the police that have been, a few have been positive and many have been negative. You're concerned about it. It's affected me by, you know, causing further stress to an already stressful existence here with, you know, the coronavirus. I used to say that, you know, these protests that were happening against amid the backdrop of coronavirus, you know.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But actually, in actuality, when I think about it, actually the coronavirus came amid the backdrop of racism in America, you know.
Right. Because it was already there.
Yeah, you know? Right.
It was already there, yes.
For like, you know, I mean, it's part of, it's kind of how the country was prospered, you know.
What did you tell your kids? What did you tell your sons when they were younger? Like, did you give them that talk, you know, the talk that black parents have to give their kids? Like, all right, now if you can stop by the police, call us. Yeah. Isn't that crazy that we have to do that? People of color, Latino people, I'm sure in minority Asians and stuff, they might have to say, you know, look, if you get stopped, you got to do this and that and other. But then the sad part is you can do everything right. And
still end up dead. You know, you could just be jogging, you know, at night.
Yes.
And get shot down.
Right.
You could just be worshiping in church, you know, and get shot down.
But they're not
terrorists,
you know. They're not terrorists, Billy. Okay, I just want you to understand that.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
That's me being sarcastic, okay?
actually, yeah, I understand all too well. But, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it affects your art. You know, the one that really got me, you know, I mean, all of them are terrible, but the Philando Castile murder.
In the car.
Really, I wrote a poem that addressed a lot of that, and I started performing it with my group.
Is that the one you posted on your social media? Because I that was like, wow. I mean, I had to keep clicking, though, but I was like, all right, okay, keep going. Okay, yes, okay, still.
Well, it was just, you know, it was just out of, like, agony, out of pain that I wrote that. I mean, to see this dude, you know, in his car bleeding to death, basically.
Right.
It really, you know, and I have never seen the video of the George Floyd murder because I can't watch it.
You don't want to see it. You don't want to see it.
I've seen the pictures of the guy's knee on his head, on his neck, but I've never seen the actual thing go down.
I saw it, and I just was like, every time somebody brings something up, I was like, okay, I got to the point where you don't have to tell me what's going on. I know what's happening. Just make sure there's justice, because it's this trauma over and over. And, you know, I think we're going to have, because it's so visual now with the social media, you know, people of color are going to have this PTSD more so. Like, you might have had something going on if you've had an incident with the police, but now with this, like, every week thing, you know. And I told my mother, like, excuse the term, but I feel like it's pick a nigga season, okay? I mean, seriously, you know, it's every other week, you know. So, But do you happen to have any of the verses in your head you might want to share with us? Or maybe another time?
Let me see. Caught in this paradigm of the new killing season, black lives snuffed out for no apparent reason while the perpetrators walk on stand your grounds. He reached for his wallet. We had to take him down. Jailed by new Jim Crow for smoking weed, populate a prison industrial complex of greed. You vilify a quarterback for a righteous act of defiance and elect a sociopath with a Russian alliance. Your willful ignorance of America's original sin means we never crawl out of this racist bleep hole we're in, because the legacy of slavery is a blister on this nation, and the festering filth won't be whitewashed with my assimilation into Eurocentric values when those values mandate that I must devalue African values in order to assimilate. For though I speak your King's English as well as you can, when I see a police car, I remember I'm a black man. Anyway, it goes on and on and on.
Wow, that's awesome. Thank you so much for sharing. I was like, oh, I'm going to put him on the spot if I say this, but it was so good. You know, people go to his Instagram account, and I'm not sure if it's on the Twitter, but on Instagram, it's Billy Childs
Piano. It's on Instagram. Yeah, okay. It's on Instagram. It's also on Facebook. Like, you can go to my fan page. It's also on YouTube, actually.
Oh, okay.
It's called
the
poem's called Black America.
All right.
And just type in Billy Childs, Black America, and you can find it. Like it dislike it, whatever you want to do. I've had some pushback on it, too, you know.
Yeah. So. Well, anyway, we're going to listen to your music right now, and hopefully that'll calm everybody's nerves. So this is it never entered my mind, and then we'll talk about this here.
Okay.
Oh, I got the wrong one here. Come on. Sorry, people. This is computer technology. All right, let's. Now, that's a Gershwin song, and I know there's a story I heard about your relationship with Mulgrew Miller. You want to tell the audience a little bit about how you started to play this song?
Well, you know, yeah, Mulgrew, first of all, was like a musical brother to me. You know, he was like very close, as was James Williams, who was also a New York jazz pianist, really heavyweight. Passed away in like 2004, I think. But Mulgrew used to live in Los Angeles, and actually I met Mulgrew in Los Angeles. He lived here for about a year or something, or maybe a year and a half. Then he got the gig with Mercer Ellington and moved to New York, and the rest is history. So I knew him back then, and, you know, we kept in touch. We were always friendly and really cool with each other. And one time, you know, we would hang out at the piano together and exchange ideas. And one time he came to L.A., it had to be like maybe 15 years ago or something, and he was playing in this little club. And he played that song. And I had, to my shame, I had never heard that song before, you know.
Right.
For some reason, you know, there's a Miles version of it that kind of slipped from my, you know, off my radar. And also there's a Frank Sinatra version. But I never heard it. So when he played it, I was like, that's a beautiful song. What is it? And plus, it was how he played it that really connected with me. So after the gig, I asked him to show me the song, and he did. So every time I play the song, I think of Mulgrew, you know, and I try to kind of recapture that moment. You know, Mulgrew had a way, which I can only attribute to, like, really great physical strength in his hands. You know, he had a way to play soft, and delicately, but still, you know, with precision and conviction, you know, which is really hard to do. You know, usually if you want to play precise, you kind of play harder and more sharp, you know. By sharp, I mean a sharp attack.
Right.
But he had a very, you know, he had a way of playing softly and making it sound easy, you know, which I think, you know, you can only do if you have incredible strength in your head.
It's almost like he was a ballet dancer for the piano.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because ballet dancers, they have to have incredible strength to lift themselves up, flip around, and then land like, you know, like they're a feather back
right.
onto the stage, you know, and it seems magical, and that takes the strength, you know,
yeah.
that people,
yeah.
they don't realize they have to have. So he was like
yeah.
a ballet dancer for the piano, the way you're describing him, you
yeah.
know.
Yeah.
Now, you know, he's a ballet dancer for the piano, but you yourself, you know, you're not too shabby. You've gotten a couple Grammys. I mean, I'm just saying, and, you know, you're composing this and composing that. So,
trying to anyway. Well, thanks
so
for mentioning.
No problem. The name Acceptance. Mm-hmm. How did you come about the name Acceptance for this album, and what does that mean to you, Acceptance? What are you trying to accept?
Well, things that you may not want to accept. You know, I mean, you know, people as you get older, you know, people. You have to accept what life is, what it is, the cycle of life. People get, you know, sick, you know, they have diseases or something that are terminal or inoperable or alter, or if they aren't terminal, they alter their way of life. And people pass away, relationships end, you know, or change, you know, like that Joni Mitchell song in Both Sides Now. Now old friends are acting strange. They shake their heads. They say, I've changed. And something's lost and something's gained in living every day.
Wow.
I think that's true, you know. And so you just... There's a certain amount of grief that comes with things changing in a way that, you know, they call it being bittersweet, you know, like things
yeah.
like change in a way that you don't want it marks out the passage of time. You know, the passage of time is really, you know, keeps moving, and it makes you aware that time passes, and there's a certain amount of sadness with that.
And how do you deal with that?
The acceptance, because like in the five stages of grief, you know, the last one that you have to come to in order to survive is acceptance, you know. So that's kind of what it's about.
Yeah, I have a degree in social work, and I was working with some young gentlemen that were like 13 to 18 years old, and one of the sessions we did was about grief. And, you know, people say, well, I didn't talk about death with kids, but in talking with these young kids, you know, boys of color, almost every one of them had known someone who had been killed, and they weren't even 18, you know?
Right.
So we had to, I felt it was my duty to talk to them about this and how to handle this. And one of the things we did in there was writing a letter to the person that, you know, maybe had been close to you and letting them know, you know, how you feel, and also letting them know kind of an update, hey, this is what's happening with me now. That can help people sometimes in dealing, you know, with grief.
Writing helps a lot. Keeping journals, you know, really helps.
Yeah.
You know,
And
it's good it's good to read them later and know where you were then, you know.
Right, yeah. It's like a marker, like you were saying, you know, like you said, it's a marking at point in time that this is when that happened, and then that's when that shift happened, like, okay, now this is what I'm going to have to do now at this point. I'm maybe going in a different direction, you know.
Yeah.
But that's okay, you know, it's okay because we can't control time yet.
Yeah.
I'm sure the military is probably, you know, working on something on that. Let me play Leimert Park and we can talk about that. All right, hold on.
Okay.
Here. From Billy Child's most recent album, Acceptance. So that was an actual place in California where people used to play music. Tell us a little bit about that.
It's still people still play music there. Leimert Park is kind of like a central hub of Black culture. It's off of Crenshaw Boulevard, south of, I know this probably means nothing to you.
That's your marker.
It's a very centralized section of Los Angeles, right? It's a little bit north of South Central, you know, like it's north of Compton, and it's really, you know. What inspired the song was, the song just kind of happened because I was playing with Mike Clark and Paul Jackson in that group, the Headhunters, that Herbie had started. But then they wanted to revisit that group, but have another piano player. So, which is, you know, kind of like a sub for Herbie, really, is like pretty daunting, you know. So, but what happened, the upshot of that was the rhythm section that played on all that classic stuff, like that album Thrust and the song Actual Proof, which kind of changed the way people perceived jazz funk. With that drum performance of Mike Clark and the bass playing of Paul Jackson and what Herbie did over it, you know, that kind of was a seminal recording. And so I got to play with those two, Mike Clark and Paul Jackson, which is a huge honor for me. And we wanted to go into a studio and record. So we went to a studio and just started playing this, you know, they played this groove and I came up with this pattern over the groove and then this melody over it. You know, the song remained nameless for a while. But it always reminded me of Leimert Park. Leimert Park was a place where, you know, you'd go there on Saturday night. I used to play in this band that played every Saturday night at Leimert Park. There's a club called Fifth Street, a guy named Dick, who was homeless. And got his life together and started this club in Leimert Park. And so we were like the house band for a lot of rappers to come up and just play with us. Some of them were extraordinary. Like a lot of them from the Freestyle Fellowship would come up. But anyway, you know, there was life going on. There was, like, people playing chess outside. There was, like, poetry readings around the corner. There was jazz being played. It was, you know, on any given Saturday night, it was really great. So that song kind of reminded me of that time at Leimert Park. So that's how it came about.
So that was, like, a really happy time, you know, really creating and melding ideas together and things like that, you know. And that
especially poetry with music, especially poetry with music. That was like the genesis of a lot of what I do now, is with poetry and music, started in Leimert Park.
So now we're going to get ready to end. We kind of run out of time, but you wrote most of the things here on your album. And did any of the other artists assist you in writing, or did you like, you're like, I'm the dictator of music? You gotta do that thing. How did the flow come about?
it's not a democracy.
Okay.
No, that's not true. I mean, you know, as is the case with jazz is the most democratic forms of music, because it's like, or chamber music also, you know. It's, you know, it's interdependent, and it's, you know, you kind of have to coexist in this jazz realm and exchange ideas, basically. So I wrote most of the music. I mean, if you're the artist, you know, and you're putting out an album, people are going to look to you as being the leader. And it's about what your vision is, and you you have the vision, but then everybody does what they do with it, and it turns into something that belongs to everybody in the group. So that's kind of where it's at.
That's how it goes. Well, thank you so much, Billy, you know, for coming on today. I know we had a little glitch, but now we came together. I really enjoyed speaking with you, and I wish you a lot of success with this album. And I look forward to whatever the next one is, and I hope you can come back on the show.
I hope so, too. Yeah.
All right. Thank you. You're welcome. So you have a lovely weekend, okay? You enjoy yourself as best you can.
Okay. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. I just got off the phone with a musician, composer, Grammy winner, Billy Childs, and we were talking about his album, Acceptance. And I'll be giving away some copies of his album, Acceptance. So check me out on Twitter, at Joy Keys. Also check me out on Facebook, Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys, and on Instagram. That way you can have a chance to win. Keep an eye out. You never know. Also, look through the Instagram page or Twitter. You'll see some other giveaways I've had. I still have a lot of CDs and books and things from other artists, writers, that I still have a couple copies left. So maybe go back and see what other things have been posted, and you could possibly, you know, win that book that maybe somebody else didn't think they could win. I'm going to leave you with Twilight is Upon Us. This is from Billy Childs' album, Acceptance. You guys have a lovely weekend.